It's a bit of a wet day in Melbourne, and I'm standing outside a block of flats. They just look like an ordinary block of flats. But I'm going to meet a man called John, and he grew up in country Victoria, worked in the railways, and then got retrenched and found himself in really unstable accommodation, living in boarding houses. And now he's living in aged care accommodation provided by Winteringham. So we're just going up the stairs.
I had a fortunate life, you know, all my life, no problems, always had a job, always had roof over my head, you know. And then I turned into, when I was in my 50s, that's when the crunch came. Thrown on the scrap heap. I was, you're gone. You know, your job's gone and there was no jobs, you know. I was a storeman on the railways originally, and I worked as a fitter's assistant, boilermaker's assistant. And that was a good job, good people, you know. I enjoyed working there. But when Jeffrey had the bust up about the tramways union and then going on strike with the Grand Prix, he decided to privatise everything. And
so that was in the 90s?
That was 99, yeah. And I assumed that there's plenty of work out there and all that sort of thing. But I found out the reality, there was none.
And how long ago did you come to live with Winteringham?
2013, be January 2013.
So tell me about that 13, 14 years when you were made retrenched. What was life like for you?
It was a bit of a nightmare, you know, but I know that there's a lot of people who did it worse than me, you know, so I don't try not to complain. I went to the sort of the edge of things, and I contemplated a suicide at one time, you know, and all this sort of thing. And, you know, people thought, oh, he's just depressed. But, I guess it all mounts up, you know. But thankfully, I want to stay alive, you know, and I believe in God. I'm not a Bible basher or anything like that, but, you know, I know that there's a reason why we're here and all that sort of thing. I got a job later on in 2006 with the Bureau of Statistics, with the census. I worked on there for about 20 months or so, you know, and that was a good change. That was a pickup for my life, you know, it was good. But of course, when that was over, back to reality, and there was no jobs for a long time.
In 2008, John came close to dying when he got deep vein thrombosis. He ended up having several toes amputated. At the time, he was living in a boarding house, and he says some of these houses were good, but still, violence could kick off at any time.
Like I say, I've had a fortunate life, you know, and you move all of a sudden into a place where a lot of people have drug issues, and that, which I'm not into drugs. I've got friends who are ex-drug addicts and that, but I'm not a drug user, you know. And when you move into in a rooming house, you get good people, you get bad people, you know, as the old saying goes. Where I was living, there was 23 people, and that's a heck of a lot of people to have in one place, you know, and people are coming and going all the time.
Did you ever witness any violence or you know, were you told stories about violence?
You got to the stage, you got sick of it because you didn't know what was going to happen. The police were called and, don't worry, nothing to see here, and the police went away, you know. One bloke had trouble with this other fella. He wanted to fight him, and he got stabbed 5 times with a pair of scissors. Next morning, they were both thrown out by the landlady. But the night that the chappie got the biro in the throat...
So, someone got stabbed in the throat with a biro?
Yeah. Like I say, I didn't get involved because I didn't know anybody really there, you know what I mean? And the police knocked on my door about 3 o'clock in the morning. Did you hear anything? No. Did you witness anything? No. You don't get involved, you know.
I mean, that sounds really stressful, living somewhere where you go to sleep and you're not sure whether there's going to be a fracas kicking off somewhere around you. I mean, that sounds pretty stressful.
Well, when you get up to my age, you think they're getting too old for this crap, you know, if you pardon my French. And you don't want it, you know. You want a quiet, peaceful sort of a life, you know. I want to say that Winteringham has been fantastic to me, that's for sure, you know. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. I never thought this was ever going to happen. I thought I was going to be a merry-go-round of living in flop houses, you know. I was lucky I missed out on that, you know. I come to Winteringham.
Winteringham was started in 1989, and today it runs 6 aged care facilities and more than 600 self-contained homes in Victoria. The organisation only works with people aged 50 and above who are at risk of homelessness. But right now, I'm standing on a wet road and I'm looking at a green V8 ute. You know, it's Kermit the Frog green. The owner of the ute is Brian Littman, the founder and CEO of Winteringham.
This is not the car I expected to be getting into. All right.
Okay. So, Brian, you started Winteringham in 1989. So in 2019, that's 30 years. Over that time, over the 30-year period, what changes have particularly jumped out for you in terms of the types of people who are ending up in your facilities and the reasons why they're being homeless in the first place?
Oh, I think the people who we care for are almost invariably poor, and they're not the stereotype of homelessness, which to some extent I used to see 30, 40 years ago in the shelters.
When you say the stereotype, as
well,
in...
Well, the drinking and the social miscreants and people like that. There were never that many of those types of people anyway, but certainly nowadays you see a lot of people who have lived ordinary lives and are suddenly find themselves, and often to their great shame, in a difficult circumstance, so that they might have got too old, they've lost their job, or they've been retrenched, or their partner has died or left, so they no longer have their income source, so they can't afford the rent. So then they have to downsize, and often they can't find accommodation, so they end up sleeping with their kids on the sofa or in terrible accommodation. And these people are not at all used to or experienced to anything to do with the homeless world whatsoever.
And I imagine many people will be thinking, how do you pay for all this?
Well, the recurrent subsidies come from the Commonwealth, just like any other aged care facility.
So by that you mean each person gets a certain amount of funding?
Yeah, that's right. So we have two major problems. We have a problem that we can't build anything, because organisations build housing or aged care through accommodation bonds. So people pay anything up to $1 million or $1.5 million for accommodation charges. I can usually get over that, or not usually, but sometimes get over that through philanthropy and Commonwealth. The great problem, though, is the recurrent subsidy. Mainstream aged care providers get more money to look after relatively simple clients than we do, who care for people that the mainstream won't accommodate.
And am I right in thinking that basically the only thing that clients can really provide you is some of their disability support pension or aged care pension, and that's pretty much it?
Yeah, that's all they provide. But it does say something about the aged care system that an organisation like Winteringham, without any bonds, or very few bonds, and without no family supports, can remain financially viable for 30 years and grow to the size that we are. We're now the largest in Australia for homeless people, but it's getting harder and harder.
So what is happening today is their Christmas party.
Yeah. And, we've arrived at Gilganya, Winteringham's aged care home in Coburg, and it's the lead up to Christmas. So there's a party going on and Elvis is doing the honours. I walk out past the party, and there's a series of small houses linked by boardwalks, surrounded by leafy green plants, and there's even a pond with lilies. It's a beautiful place. And I'm meeting a woman who lives here.
Hello, my name's Lorraine Hogan, and I live out of Winteringham in Coburg.
We're sitting inside one of the kind of communal rooms. So you and your husband had a business, I believe.
Yes, we had a business. My husband had an engineering business. We lived quite a nice life before all this happened, but then tragedy struck us.
He passed away.
Which it does with lots of families. And then you don't think you are going to lose your home. You're still getting over grief when I've been married for 27 years. It was about 3 years later, we were a very close family, just started to get over the tragic of it all. And then the banks rang me to say that, what's happening, that there's no mortgages being paid or anything. And we don't owe a mortgage, yeah.
Lorraine says a childhood friend forged her signature and then borrowed money against her house.
And then along the track we had court cases, right, but then we had to take it more to higher court when we didn't have the money to keep going. So, and it was getting too stressful for me. So we decided to sell it and make everything square. So, and I become homeless then. And then I stayed with my friend in Footscray.
So you were couch surfing with a friend?
Yes, she's married with four boys. Her house is not very big. She's got a three-bedroom house. Up at night time when it was time to go to sleep, when everybody, we used to put the mattress on her lounge floor and I used to sleep on her lounge floor for 1 year.
How old are you now, Lorraine?
I'm 75 now, yeah. Then I started applying for places, and it was Delahay, when they just bought Delahay.
That's a place outside of Melbourne.
Yes, and I was quite fortunate that I could go there to live. From there, I stayed out there 4 years, and I live in Wittenham, independent living at Coburg, so it's been wonderful. I feel very safe and very happy here.
So, Lorraine, it's fair to say that your life took a really unexpected turn when you lost your house. I don't want to be Pollyanna-ish about this, but has there been a bit of a silver lining to this?
Yes, it has. I think, you know, when I had a house, I had a happy marriage and two children. I never understood. And since I've become homeless, I volunteered with homeless women for 10 years. And then I learned that there's more tragic out there than what I went through.
And I imagine you meet people who live here and you're able to share their stories as well.
Yes. Oh, I sit down lots with some of the people here. We sit down and have a chat and we talk about our lives and what brought us here. But it's good if we can sit down and listen, you know, and not judge people. To me, I feel to me, even though I live here, that we're all equal. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Lorraine.
That's fine. Thank you. Yeah.
30 years on, Brian Lipman thinks it's appalling that he had to start Winteringham in the first place. But he remains motivated.
I'm still working with impassioned young people who inspire me regularly. I'm still working with bureaucrats who are trying to do everything they can to help us. That hasn't changed. I'm disturbed that the numbers are increasing. But then on the other hand, I'm really proud of what we've been able to do. It's really a blight on the industry that an organisation like Winteringham had to get started. But now that it's started, people are almost saying, well, we don't have to do it because Winteringham is doing it. It would be wonderful if I was able to go to my board and say, look, you know, we're not needed anymore, we can close. We should now be working flat out, just getting work for all of our valuable employees. But that's not happening, we keep growing. So those aged care organisations with lots of money, they really could be doing more, but there should never have been a need for Winteringham, ever.